Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of October 2024. I am your host, Robert, and I got me 12 ounces of Red Bull because it's probably going to be one of those nights. And with me, I have
a half a liter bottle of water, which I probably should get more of because, oh boy, we got a lot to get to, don't we?
And
this is where I would have said done today, but I can't for a reason.
Oh yeah, that is the thing that happened today, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm behind for reasons.
You know, I could have warned y'all, but nobody ever wants to hear the opinion of the manga readers on these things.
Excuse me, want me to go with fresh eyes and ears.
Okay, fair enough if you want to, but like I'm just saying, somebody could have we could have prepared you gently. I mean, it probably still wouldn't help. I mean, I don't think I'm emotionally prepared to relive that moment, but you know, I'm just saying. Look, I'm just saying, you're keep that little bit of advice in mind when Chainsaw Man eventually gets to where Volume 9 of the manga covers. Yeah, you're all gonna need a shoulder to cry on.
So, we'll get there in, like, what, 4 or 5 years?
MAPPA can... Look...
So, when we're 40.
On the one hand...
When I'm 40.
I do not like MAPPA as a nightmare sweatshop meat factory of, bullshit, but also, just give me the Bomb Girl movie already. I need my anime Sharknado. I also need to find out how you actually pronounce Bomb Girl's name, because I'm pretty sure all of us in the fandom still cannot agree. But we don't have time to go into tangents about that. This is not a Chainsaw Man podcast. Yet.
Yet.
Instead, this is the album roundup for October, as we have said. And while there was definitely quite a bit of stuff going on, I can also say we also listened to quite a bit more stuff than last time. Because, hoo-hoo, boy.
We have a lot.
We have lists and stuff. So... yeah, we probably shouldn't fuck around too much anymore. Let's get right into it. So let's actually recap the month and discuss some of the more noteworthy releases and just what exactly the hell came out this past month. As always, we start with the first Friday, October 4th, 2024. Your new releases included the latest from death metal band Blood Incantation with Absolute Elsewhere. From industrial producer Pharmacon, we had Maggot Mass. From new metal band Fever 333, their second studio album Darker White. From Motley Crue, we had an EP called Cancelled, which, God, I wish someone would cancel them. From Mastodon, we of course had the 15th anniversary Crack the Sky, and oh my god, I didn't even listen to that one. Jesus Christ, there was so much this month. Anyway, moving on from that, there's a collaboration project between Dawn Richard and Spencer Zahn with Quiet in a World Full of Noise. We had a posthumous release from the late Rich Homie Quan with Forever Going In. From Caribou, we had their new album Honey. From Jordy Greep, former frontman of Black Midi, his solo debut The New Sound. From the post-rock band Godspeed You Black Emperor, their new album, no title as of 13 February 2024, 28,340 dead. This one I'm only putting in here just because I want to feel out the reactions of anybody who might not be suspecting this. From a group called Come Girl 8, The Eighth Coming.
Okay. Huh?
You get no context for that.
Oh.
Ugh.
From Phineas, no Ferb, we had For Crying Out Loud. And from Coldplay, we have Why Is Fucking the Dude from Coldplay Allowed to Still Make Music? Lame. Now let's go on to the week of October 11th, 2024. Your new releases included Cool World, the second studio album from Oklahoma band Chatpile. From experimental metal act Oransi Pazuzu, we had Muntautuja. I think I said that right. From post-hardcore act Touche Amore, their new album Spiral in a Straight Line. From the band Envy, their new album Unoya. From Miles Kennedy, a new solo project, The Art of Letting Go. From rapper Elucid, his new solo project, Revelator. If you're into Glorilla, she had a new album out called Glorious. Heh, get it? From Double XL freshman Big X The Plug, his new project Take Care. From The Offspring, we have Who's Letting The Offspring Still Record Music? Who's giving them money to record new albums? I want names. From Jelly Roll, we had the project Beautifully Broken. And Brat Summer is going into overtime, bitches. Charlie XCX with the remix album Brat, and it's completely different, but also still Brat. Now we move on to October 18th, 2024. The Armed dropped a new EP called Everlasting Gaze. Guitarist Jerry Cantrell dropped a new solo project, I Want Blood. From Benny the Butcher and 38 Spesh, we had Stabbed and Shot 2. From Yeet, we had the album Lifestyle, spelled with a Y. From the Canadian rock duo Japan Droids, we have their final studio album Fate and Alcohol. From Tim Heidecker, we had the album Slipping Away. From MC5, we have their final album Heavy Lifting, a posthumous release for pretty much everyone in the band. They're all dead, but yeah, this is the last one that had, like, Wayne Kramer on it. From singer Rag and Bone Man, we had What Do You Believe In? From Kylie Minogue, we had Tension 2. From Joe Jonas, we had Music for People Who Believe in Love. Is this him answering Rag and Bone Man? Who knows? As I had warned in the weekly episode proper, Dan and Shay dropped a Christmas album titled It's Officially Christmas, the double album. Oh my fucking Jesus. A double Christmas album from Dan and Shay. Oh. God, this is a worse level of hell than being stuck in a room with Valentino from Has-Been Hotel.
If you enter a coffee shop and that's playing, run.
Oh, goddamn right, I'm running. That just sounds... You know what? That sounds so nightmarish, it makes me want to hear Mariah Carey. And from Shawn Mendes, we had Shawn. Now, for the week of October 25th, 2024, we had Devin Townsend with his new album, Power Nerd. From Better Lovers, we had their debut project, Highly Irresponsible. Well, their debut full-length album, not including the EP. You know what I mean. From Fit for an Autopsy, we had The Nothing That Is. If you follow 311, for some reason, we had their album Full Bloom. From Pixies, The Night That Zombies Came. From Sonker Mommy, there was Evergreen. From Huncho, we had the project Thank God. From the Allman Brothers Band, we had a live release called Final Concert 10-18-14. From Halsey, we had her new album The Great Impersonator. And from Megan Thee Stallion, we had a deluxe edition version of Megan called Megan Act 2. Then moving on to the other odds and ends that came out throughout the last few days. Of course, October 28th saw the release of Tyler, the Creator's newest studio album, Chromacopia. Also on October 28th, from various artists, including the guitarists of Polyphia, Howard Jones, Matt Heafy, etc., we had Hymns of the Unholy, a tribute EP to the popular indie game Cult of the Lamb. On October 29th, from Earth Gang, we had the project Perfect Fantasy. And October 31st, Halloween, we had an EP from West Side Gun with 11. And I realize it's also probably cutting it really close to November 1st, but... I mean, we're not doing a roundup for November, so if anybody wants to talk about any albums on that day, hey, that's between you and the good Lord.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Lord, you all actually are going to do that, aren't you? Well, I should I should probably let you all do that then. So, as always, now that we have that roundup, you know, rounded up, we need to actually talk about some albums proper. So, of course, Alex, you go first.
Okay, and just as a heads up, there was a lot of stuff that came out. I didn't get to everything, but that didn't stop me from getting a whole bunch of crap on here, because I have, well, you all know what I normally have. I usually have like 5, maybe 6 releases. No. 16.
Jesus!
Yeah, and I'm bending some rules here. I'm including some anniversary releases and some deluxe reissues, well, just one deluxe reissue, and some other odds and ends, and some things that came out on November 1st, because we don't do a November roundup, and fuck it, who cares at this point? So yeah, there was quite a bit that came out. I didn't get to everything, but I did get to a lot of stuff. And I will start with my assortment of reissues, because when the hell else am I going to talk about these albums? Starting with Crack the Sky, the 15th anniversary reissue from Mastodon. This album is just, it's so good. It's the ultimate blend of prog rock, prog metal, southern metal, and a little bit of country licks. I mean, the banjo and divinations. I mean, that's just fun. That's just fun. And it's also the last album Mastodon did that sort of tied into their whole elemental theme, in a matter of speaking, for their first couple albums, like Leviathan, Blood Mountain. It was all very somatic. And this was basically like, words are hard. This is what I consider to be the apex of it. And also sort of a creative peak. Not to say that the albums that came out afterwards are lesser. I think The Hunter is okay, and I still like most of Once More Round the Sun, but Crack the Sky to me is just the peak. Even the title track, which if you know the backstory behind that track, it is it's quite a tearjerker, and Scott Kelly being on to add in some extra harsh vocals, it's chilling, but in a good way. Same with the closing track, The Last Baron, a freaking 14-minute-long epic. These guys were doing that in 2009. Like, and they're not considered a prog band, but like, damn.
Listen, man, we know it when we hear it. Prog is prog.
Yeah. The prog kids were eating good in 2009. We had that. We had Black Cloth Silver Linings. We had the Periphery debut album. We had it good.
It never got that good again.
Yeah, and the deluxe edition is very nice. I didn't get the box set. I didn't get any vinyl releases because technically I have two copies of it. One's a regular version. One is a color variant. I did buy the CD and Blu-ray set, though, which is nice to have. I'm trying to do more of that because physical media is only here once. May as well make the most of it.
Yeah.
Then the second one on here, again, when else am I ever going to talk about it? Green Day, American Idiot. It's 20 years old. It got an anniversary reissue. I didn't buy any versions of it because I have a really good vinyl copy of it. But I do have the digital version sitting in my Apple Music account. So, yeah. I really like this album. I know, Rob, you're not a big fan of Green Day just on principle. But to me, this is one of those albums that you hear when you're younger and you're either into it or you're not, and I was into it. And I didn't even know what was going on back in 2004, because I was stupid. But I have some old friends to thank for burning me a CD of it, and letting me have it so I could have it in my iTunes library for the last 20 years. And yeah, having a box set like this, it's fun. It's cool to have all the extra odds and ends, like demos and live tracks and unreleased cuts and even more live tracks from that VH1 Storyteller special they did, which I wish I could find in full. God. And, I'll just say what everybody has said. The concept is kind of messy. It's more thematic than narrative anyway. And those messages about 2004 era America. time really is a flat circle, isn't it?
The flattest.
Yeah. I will say this, though. I like the deep cuts more than like the main singles. I've heard the singles so many times. When I hear like Homecoming or Extraordinary Girl or even Letter Bomb, those are the tracks that really get me going. And I'm also a big fan of the closing track, What's Her Name. It's just a nice little moody, you know, detuned ballad to listen to. But again, that's just me talking.
So I'll just admit this up front. Like, because I don't know when else I'm going to get to say this. I have actually never heard this album in full. So like, here's my thing. I'll admit, like, I like Dookie. Like, Dookie for me is like my favorite stuff that I've heard from them. Like, I will freely agree that's a classic. And I think the main reason why I, like, never actually heard this one is because the first Green Day album I heard when it was new was 21st Century Breakdown. A buddy of mine in New York sent me a torrent. And that just kind of, like, soured me on wanting to listen more.
Yeah, that is a very bad starting place. Like, you should have started with, like, Warning or freaking Insomniac. God, yeah. If anybody's starting on that fucking album, God. But, yeah, just thought I'd mention that. Good albums remain good, and bad albums just get forgotten. Now, the third one here, technically speaking, I don't have it because Amazon kind of fucked me over on it. So I bought the Porcupine Tree Fear of a Blank Planet Deluxe Edition release. I couldn't get it from the Burning Shed store because freaking United Kingdom shipping costs are so fucking expensive. I hate it. But I was able to find a listing on Amazon through Amazon, and I put my order in, and the release date came and went, and I heard nothing. And it's basically the Seinfeld bit about the rental car. You know how to take the reservation, you just don't know how to hold the reservation. So I had to find another listing on Amazon for the same price, and it'll be here in like a month.
Oh, Lord.
Ew. Yeah. So even though I don't have it, I'm still going to talk about it because, like, it's Porcupine Tree's Fear of a Blank Planet. It is 2007 teenage angst set around prog metal. Like, of course. Like, this was one of the first albums I listened to from them when I was getting into them in my later years of high school. It was this and Deadwing, which is a great one-two punch. That's how you get introduced to a band late, with good albums. Not 21st Century fucking Breakdown.
Listen, I'm bad with starting points on things. Like, fun fact, my first Devil May Cry game was 4. And that probably explains why I take kind of a dim view of the series and why I probably think the reboot is the only fun one. That is my spiciest gaming take, and you are invited to fight me in a Denny's parking lot over it.
And my favorite Devil May Cry game is Bayonetta.
Hell yeah, let's go!
Anyway, if you're ever playing Planet, it's a 6-track album released in 2007. Kind of weird, I know. But, you know, Stephen Wilson's a weird guy, and he likes to do weird things. It's an album centered around, well, teenage angst in the mid-2000s. The title track says it all. Xbox is a god to me, a finger on the Switch. My mother is a bitch. My father gave up ever trying to talk to me. A lot of themes about taking, you know, medicine for mental reasons, which sort of clouds a lot of teenagers' minds for, again, obvious reasons. The centerpiece of the album, Anesthetized, it's a 17.5-minute frickin' odyssey that did the bleed beat before Meshuggah did the bleed beat, which is just a Herda pattern. So it's not that, it's not totally original, but not a lot of bands use it because not a lot of bands can drum like that.
Are you
Gavin
saying,
Harrison Cam, though?
Are you saying that for as much as we say we all rip off Meshuggah, Meshuggah themselves ripped off Porcupine Tree?
The jury's out on it, but, you know, it's a Herda pattern. It's just, it's that. You know, anybody can do that. Yeah. Even I can do that. And I'm very uncoordinated with my hands and feet. But, yeah, very good album. I enjoy Way Out of Here because it's just filled with a lot of, you know, morose, somber, deathly feelings, which is fun to listen to. Also, there are some cool features on here. Way Out of Here has soundscapes by one Robert Fripp of King Crimson. And Anesthetized has a guitar solo by one Alex Lifeson from Rush.
Hey.
I think that's fun. Yeah. And since I don't have the box set, I can't talk about all the inner extra stuff on there. But there was an EP titled Mill Recurring that had some extra tracks on there. Again, it's just more tracks that didn't really find their way into the main album structure. Unless you bought a certain vinyl version of it from a label in the Netherlands called Tumfloat Records that released Fear of a Blank Planet with those tracks included. I did, and that's how I listened to this album, on that fantastic vinyl release. Now give me my fucking box set, Amazon! Now for a detour into remix territory with Charlie XCX, Brat, and it's completely different, but also still Bratz. I would say it backwards, but I don't know how to right now, because I've had a very, very long couple of weeks.
Note to self, learn how to reverse audio in Audacity.
It's not that hard to do. Although, I do have to ask one thing. Why was the Spring Breakers remix with Kesha not included on it the first time? Because this was put up twice online. Like, it was a very, very, very late last-minute addition, which, on one hand, I understand, but also, like, that's just kind of weird. But I will say, I do like that version of Spring Breakers. Kesha slaps very hard on it, which is fun. The rest of the remixes, I would equate it to what Linkin Park did with Reanimation. Not so much just bringing in people in to do like a couple verses. A lot of this is sort of a reconstruction of a lot of these tracks. Like, I Might Say Something Stupid is more of an extended, moody ballad that actually has a good 1975 feature on it. Surprising, I know.
Wow.
Yeah, everything romantic. Everything is romantic. We have Caroline Polachek on it, which is fun. Of course, A.G. Cook is doing a lot of heavy lifting on here. Julian Casablancas on Mean Girls, I can take or leave, to be honest. Of course, we don't have to say a whole lot about Guess featuring Billie Eilish because we said everything we need to say about that.
It's still hot in here.
Yes. Yes, it is. I might pick this up on CD, considering the vinyl release is a weird exclusive deal that might be sold out already. But yeah, Brat Summer is still ongoing into Brat Winter, even if there was a bit of a speed bump along the way. But, you know, whatever. Okay, now for some actual new albums I listened to. Holy crap, I still have 12 albums to go. Fuck! Not including the one that we're going to talk about at the end, which, if you can read the description, you already know what it's going to be. So, this new Devin Townsend album, Power Nerd.
Power Nerd!
Sometimes you just need a fun, goofy little album idea to just sort of put out into the world. And that's what this is. This was a very, I would call it a more of an exercise in fun creativity, just working together, seeing what happens, and, you know, pressing it onto a disc and putting it out for everybody. Devin actually did say in a video talking about some fun facts about the production of this album, the original lineup was going to have Mike Inez on bass, but he decided to do some more dates with Elton John instead. Wes Hauch on guitar, who he worked with on one of his 2020 tours and projects, like the 20,000 Tons of Metal cruise. Like, he played guitar on that and on the Galactic Quarantine album. And on drums, according to Devin, he was going to recruit Eloy Casagrande.
Oh!
And then he decided to join Slipknot and, yeah, obviously, plans changed. So he got some of his friends on board to help make this album, namely Darby Todd on drums. Hello again. What we got out of it was just a fun album. More of the Epicloud and Sky Blue era of Devin Townsend stuff. If you know what that sounds like, you know what that sounds like. It's much more contemporary. A little bit of pop infusion in him. But the closing track, Ruby Quaker, speaks to me a lot more than it should. It starts off as sort of like a twangy country song talking about coffee, which I can relate to. And then it just sort of devolves into a very, very aggressive, frantic, blast beat-driven metal track, which is still fun. I'll just quote the closing lyrics on here. I love my coffee. I drink it to keep sane. If I cannot have it, then I cannot play the game. will not play the game because the game is just fucking stupid.
Now, that just raises an important question. Casualties of Cool 2, when?
I hope that's still ongoing. Though we have other projects in the work as well.
Oh, yeah. The moth is happening.
Mm-hmm. That's a, yeah, fun album. I like it. All right, next up on here, Better Lovers, Highly Irresponsible. I'm going to be very quick for the rest of these. Don't worry, I can already feel my mouth starting to dry up. Okay, Better Lovers. You know him, you love him. If you don't know him, think the best parts of Every Time I Die crossed with Dillinger Escape Plan vocals. If you like that, you're going to be in for a fun time here, and you're going to get all that and then some on the album, Highly Irresponsible. With a couple of bits of more melodic styles. You can't be super aggressive all the time, though it is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, very good album. I'm glad that these guys are getting the better end of the split here. Yes. All right, Megan Thee Stallion, Megan Act 2. I'm just going to do the Act 2 tracks on here because...
Yeah.
We're calling that a technicality. It's more of what you'd expect from Megan Thee Stallion on here. Not as many tracks as on the first half of the album. But, you know, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. Also, Sabrina Carpenter, pay attention. In the opening track, Bigger in Texas, I just hop on a G6. I'm getting head while I'm playing my Switch. That's how you do it, Sabrina. Honestly. And, yeah, we also have the remix of Mamoshi featuring Twice, the single Never Play featuring Arm of BTS, and then we have TYG featuring Spirit Box.
Yeah, buddy.
I would have liked to have heard more Courtney DelPlante vocals on here, but I will take what I get. It's a very nice, what I'm going to call, trap metal track. Also, her lyrics are very aggressive on here, and I like that. So, yeah. Step up from the first part of the album. I'll take it. All right, Tribulation, Sub Rosa in Aeternum. I hope I said that right. The Tribulation saga has been kind of interesting. We've seen some turns with band members leaving in one form or another. And here we have an album that I am going to deem an interesting cross with black metal, Ghost, and The Cure. If that sounds weird, trust me, the album is actually a little bit weirder than that. And kind of pains me to say it, I'm not that into the more subdued vocal approach on here. I don't know, there's just something about it that feels too much like Ghost crossed with Robert Smith. And I don't know, it just doesn't really fully click with me. Like, the heavier tracks are fine. It's just those softer moments. I don't know. Maybe, like, the baritone is just not as lush as it should be. Still good, but not quite what I was really going for on here. But on that note, The Cure, Spiral in a Straight Line.
I don't think that's the name of the album.
Wow, I fucked that up. Songs of a Lost World. What the fuck
was
I reading?
That's Touche Amore, but you good?
Oh my god, I got these mixed up. God damn, fuck. I have had a very long couple of weeks. I had to do a lot of listening for this. I'm very behind on Dawn to Dawn. Cut me some slack. Anyway, The Cure, Songs of a Lost World. Now I get it right. I will admit I am not fully up to date on what the kids call The Cure lore. I'm very behind on all that stuff. Like, I'm a casual. I have not heard the definitive albums. I'm sorry, everybody. I have not listened to Pornography yet. And yes, that is the name of one of their albums. One of their better albums at that. But yeah, for this album, Songs of a Lost World... I know what I'm getting, and I'm getting a lot of it. A lot of lush instrumentation, the traditional Robert Smith vocal approach, some breaks in between, you know, vocal passages, mainly at the start to sort of build up to it, and a lot of emotional baggage, or I should say emotional damage. It's like, listening to this, if you're not ready for it, you're going to be needing a lot of Kleenexes. Unfortunately for me, I like this kind of stuff, so I listen to it with a smile on my face. And, yeah, special note to the closing track, aptly titled End Song. It's all gone, left alone with nothing, the end of every song. Fun to listen to on a very rainy November day, like it was here today. It was very cold and rainy. What's up? Yeah, I like it. I may be inclined to check out more now. So, yeah, there you go. All right, this new Flying Lotus album, Spirit Box. 2 words. A bit of a shorter album than what we'd expect. Might be considered an EP in some circles. We have basically a blend of what I would call both sides of Flying Lotus' repertoire. You have the more expected electronic style, you know, crossing, you know, electronica and R&B. You have some interesting vocal features on this album, namely from Sid Sriram. Am I saying that right?
I don't know.
No clue.
Well, him and Don Richard. I was kind of expecting more of a wild approach to some of these, you know, songs with vocals on him. My brain is still thinking about You're Dead. It's never stopped thinking about You're Dead. But I will say, as a shorter album, technically only 5 tracks, we don't count the instrumental cuts, it's a fine little reprieve. Apparently this all came out of a Twin Peaks binge, so that's interesting. Mm. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Now, good gracious, look at the time. It is Griselda O'Clock, because I'm going to talk about West Side Gun's new album, Still Praying. Yes, oh. It came out November 1st. We don't care. Just let us have this.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, if you're putting an album out and you have the incredible Sid Vicious on the cover, yeah, I'm going to take a listen to that. And as we all know, West Side Gun is big into the wrestling stuff, as we all know. He even got Justin Roberts, the ring announcer for AEW, to basically record an intro for him. And it leads well into many tracks that have a lot of very heavy, intense bars on them, including, not limited to, an interlude called... My brain's rattled. There are songs named after wrestlers on here, namely Max Caster and Dr. Britt Baker. Although you forgot to add the DMD on there, Mr. Gunn. I'm also kind of both amazed and bewildered at West Side Gunn's vocal approach. It's a lot more higher pitched than I would have expected in the studio. Like, I've seen him on a couple times live. Like, is his voice always that higher pitched?
Well, I want to say yes, because I'm not gonna say it's squeaky, but it is more on a higher side, like kind of like that.
Well, it worked out pretty well on this album. It's a fun album with wrestling references. That's all I could really ask for. And from the higher pitch to the boomy lows, Freddie Gibbs, "You Only Die Once," an album that came out on Halloween.
Okay, well, damn,
I got fuck, I forgot that happened.
I got curious. I checked it out. It's an album with a framing device that Freddie Gibbs is talking to the devil, and it's okay. It's fine. Good bars on here, but I mean, it's just fine. It's just fine to me, considering what else we have to talk about. I mean, yeah, it's okay. That's all I can really say here. Okay, now for some video game stuff. This Cult of the Lamb project tribute album thing. Very heavy, very aggressive. Howard Jones and Matt Heafy trading vocal duties on here. It works well, along with all the wild arrangements and guitar parts. Hello, Scott LePage, doing that opening track solo. Glad to hear you all on here. I forget the name of the actual band doing most of the writing and arrangements, but you get two thumbs up from me.
Oh fuck! I probably should have made a note of that. Yeah.
Okay, a couple more here. This new Touche Amore album, Spiral in a Straight Line. I got that right. God. Oh, I'm a fucking moron sometimes. Okay, Touche Amore. Will we call this post-hardcore?
Something like that.
Well, whatever it is, I like it. It's basically what I would expect. Very desperate and very not so much booming, but kind of scratchy vocals with crunchy guitar licks. Yeah. I know what to expect, and I like it. Special mention, to the track Subversion, which I call the Floods chords track. Because the main guitar chords are the suspended chords of the Pantera song Floods, which is very good. I like that. Same for the closing track, Goodbye For Now, which has blast beats, and that's fun. Because we all know everything's more fun with blast beats, even post-hardcore.
Hell yeah, I'll drink to that.
And that would be all for me, but that pesky Canadian Mark Gronin had to give me one more album to scope out. And it's an album not even on Apple Music. It's on Bandcamp and YouTube.
Ah, yes, he started doing those bandwidth streams recently.
Yeah, so from the wild and weird state of Montana, I give to you Second in Command, Genre Femboy.
Huh.
This is a very interesting queer Montanan rap album that is basically got cobbled together as a response to memes and a spur of creativity. Apparently, the main individual responsible for this project was previously active in another Discord server I was in, but has not been in part of it for a while. But topic for another day. This album, it's what you would expect for Bandcamp trap hip hop and rap, albeit with a lot more queerness, which is a-okay by me. Especially given two of the tracks are named after two absolutely iconic androgynous icons, Gardevoir and Bugs Bunny. Yeah, it's one of those albums. It's a shut your brain off and enjoy the queer vibes kind of album, and I dig it. One more, but at the end, because, oh my god, this was a packed month. Oh, also, one vinyl pickup. The Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.01 soundtrack. Now it's all complete, except for a possible vinyl release of the end of Evangelion soundtrack. Come on, Milan Records, make it happen.
I still need to watch that movie. But, that was quite a lot of albums.
Yeah, yeah. Even some that I didn't expect you would get, but I'm surprised. Yeah,
yeah. Like, I've been talking for almost 30 minutes. I'm done for a while.
Yeah, so he's going to go in the corner, relax his vocal cords, and now we have to move on to Mark and however many albums he has.
Yeah, I think I have 12, but right now it's 11. I would have had more, but I cut some out due to time, or because of the fact that I ain't got more to say about most of them. Like two albums that I did that kind of time, that being The God Fade Him and Nicholas Craven with two albums, or two projects, The Myth We Never Quit 2 and 3. Yeah, that's actually two, yeah. Which they're all Bandcamp and on the Guy Fahey's YouTube page. Well, the whole, you got the whole album on his page, on his YouTube, but yeah, I understand that. Like, other than those projects, like, they're pretty good. I have like one track from the Myth Who Never Quit 2. Grant had to look at the track, but yeah, it's okay. It's a good project. Anyway, even other projects that, well, thankfully, Alex just said most of what I was gonna say. Let's start with the reissue remix shit. Meta Stallion, Mega Act 2. It's one of the same shit I got from the previous album. We just got good bangers here and there. And tracks I like, of course, well, you already mentioned them. I like TYG with Spirit Box. I like the Twice remix, the Twice remix of Mamushi and then a play with RM, which I forgot was in BTS. How many motherfuckers are in BTS?
Like
the project itself, at least the Act 2 stuff that I'm covering, because I already covered the first part. I got the same thing. My feelings are same as the reason I got some good bangers, got experimentation here and there, got some, got some good shit here and there. So yeah, I'm going on with that. It's speaking of another brother that got out the way, Brad is completely different, but also still Brad. Sorry, TX. I have to bring it to Buy CD Bass B. That's the abbreviation shit. So now I go to the remix part, and, well, if you know me, I tend to like more remix, I tend to like remix stuff than the average guy, or at least the average person, I don't know. I give it this, like, some reason I like did me in Everything's Romantic, the one with Colin Polachek in it. Rewind with Blade, or Blady, however the hell you say his name, or their name, I don't know. Apple with Japanese House, B2B with Tinashe, and of course, guest with Billie Eilish, it's obvious. And we're watching that. If I say that I would like the remix that featured the 1975 and John Hopkins, mainly the 1975, because you didn't know about that. There've been some pretty okay remixes because you got 360 remix with Robin and Young Lean. You got, of course, the one remix that I think I mentioned way back before this whole thing happened, Girls of Confusion with Lord, which, okay, yeah. We got a good remix coming here. Brad Summer's now in the Brad Fall, Brad Winter, whatever. It's Brad. There you go. And also, I got a feeling. During the end of December, when Todd Shaw's doing his top 10, yeah, he's gonna use his font, or at least maybe do the. Maybe do it backwards, or I don't know. If I wanted to do it like do the whole top 10 like kind of like backwards, you get what I mean?
Yeah, we get you.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Next up, Don Richard and Spencer Zahn, Quiet in a World Full of Noise. I think this is whole new to me. Like, described as, very R&B, soul, jazz, fusion, something. I don't know what to call it, but I guess it's not, well, it ain't Bucks Just the One Thing, which, okay, that's good. But I say, this is all I listen. Like, the whole thing's very, very calming, quiet, atmospheric, and kind of in a little way, do the vocals and production, which, this is something that people talk about, but it's very open, kind of ambient, I want to say, in a way. I mean, it's not ambient, but it's more like, very, it's a very calm sound that I could just say, I just come in and like, oh, this is, it's kind of good. It's quite calm. I can have a go with this. Like, yeah, like, it's something that you listen to throughout the submerge yourself into, which is pretty good stuff. Next up, we're looking to Glorilla with Glorious. Her debut album, even though she has a lot of mixtapes that I haven't listened to, which, gotta say, the debut album is, we'll say, it's really glowing.
Hey!
She has something to put out of it. Why not? But yeah, that's really kind of decent, to be honest. Like, I know her prior projects, well, I know most of it, but I do keep hearing the album being good and all, and I say, as I get a listen, which, all right, it's very decent. She covers a lot of shit, like, you know, like, very usual topics, like dealing with Red Flag Man on the song Don't Deserve Her Money Long. You get some bangers here and there, some instrumental tracks with, there's one that's very gospel influenced because it has freaking Kirk Franklin on it. And also like Madison Music and Carol and Kara Shepherd. Like, anyway, yeah, if you know your Kirk Franklin, you know this is about to jump off. Even just like a Let Her Cook, which of course very good. Of course, that's very good. And How It Look, which features Megan Thee Stallion, which that's not a plus. Again, like, I don't venture out on Gorilla as much, but it's a good first impression. It's a solid recommendation. Like, if you're looking for, you know, like, if you look at, if you, and this has some, and before somebody goes, yes, it does have some success to it. She does have some real shit. In case you want about that. But yeah, I say it's a solid recommendation. And now I got these four rap albums that I'm just gonna be short with because I'm gonna be honest, I ain't got much to say about them. It just means that I ain't got much to say about most of them. But yeah. And this one, I'm pretty sure, Rob, you're going to talk about this later on. That is Elucid with Relevator. If you heard Armie Hammer a lot or Billy Woods, you would say, okay. I was like, oh, all right, which it is pretty good. It's basically what you kind of expect from. Okay, if you heard Armie Hammer a lot, you might want to. Okay, this is really good. This is a really good project. Is what we're going to say. Okay, the next quick one is DJ Muggs, Crime Apple, and ROX with the album, and it's called Los Pollos Hermanos.
Oh, hey, and I understand that reference.
And yes, the album cover. Yes, the album cover has a pick of Esposito from Gus, you know, as Gus from Breaking Bad, as in, you know, that scene. You know that scene. You know.
Peak television. And,
yeah, you know, and. I admit the album cover did come my eye, and even though it's good, you know, it's fine. Like, never did what I heard from Muggs and Crime Apple, but yeah, that's what I expected, but yeah, it's pretty decent. Willie the Kid and V Don, which an album called Dutch Marks 4, and while I say I'm slightly familiar with them, Willie Dude, they made features on somebody else's album. But then again, if you like your underground hip hop with the street edge, this will be all right. Also, reason why they're coming because I like the one check they had with the Alchemist called Briefcase Raps, which is pretty good. And of course, being the Butcher and 38 Splash, Stott and Shaft, okay, which. I mean, not really much different from what I heard from Benny this year, considering he released a lot of projects, like many projects, like you've been using shit here and there for the past couple of months, and it's fine, it's okay. I mean, slightly, this year Benny has been kind of on me. I mean, I wasn't really feeling his January, in the beginning of the year, his album generally, I thought it was eh. The rest of the project he did, like, they were fine, but, you know, they got the street shit that he's been doing, because, like, the one mainstream he did was kind of too, man. This one, again, it's fine, it's back to his gritty street shit, but, yeah, it's the vibe I'll go back to as much, but, yeah, I'll give it that. Next up is, since Alice covered this earlier, as earlier, Flying Lotus for Spirit Box. I was gonna make a joke about well, Spirit Box on here, but yeah, that's done now. So this EP pretty good. It's pretty much like you get all the flavors you expect from Flying Lotus. Like you get the high energy shit, get the high energy shit, the moody shit. Little Cook with Dungeon was pretty good. Hussy is also good. And there's a taste, it's gonna have a little taste before whenever the next Flying Lotus will be out. I hope it's soon. Then again, he might be busy with a lot of that stuff, you know, with movies and stuff. I don't know what next one will be, but there's some good shit. Alright. And now I'm West Side Gun. And this time I'm covering both projects, 11 and Still Praying. Well, I'll go 11 first. 11 being the EP, which I'm guessing is a continuation of his HWH series. You know, the one whose name I can't say.
Yeah.
Although for him it's personal because he stated himself, that is the most personal project I ever made. He said it because my brother was killing April, but narrated by my brother who has life in prison, trying to come home. The scenes being Big Dump, as you saw on the cover, and Sly Green being the one incarcerated, as you can see on the album, as in the comment, is Free Sly for Big Dump, which, he has a lot of dead relatives they rap about, which is kind of sad. The EP produced by a producer, Dave LaFlair, and there's not much features on the sound, like you got some sound from the late DJ K-Slay, and some spoken word from the usual feature artist, Keisha Plum. I get a similar gun on someone's voice to his people, which will go on his head, doing with Wallace, all that shit, which I kind of respect that. Is it my favorite of the project? Not really, but I can respect the effort. I respect what it did to it. And I can give it this. Like, it ain't my favorite, but I get along with this. Now we're Still Praying. Of course, this is a mixtape, not an album, just to clarify, because I don't know how things go. I've already covered the wrestling part, so that's that shit. Of course, like, I have a lot more of his projects, more like his Fly Guys, Awesome Guys series. We get the usually gritty Griselda sound the way it's tend to be. You get production, like, the production is very, you know, gritty. Like, you get people like, you know, Derringer, DJ Muggs, Conductor, Camouflage Monk, of course, Dane LaFlair, and basically strictly that. And of course, like, the features you get are mostly mainly from the Griselda camp, or people fully aggressive Griselda, like Conway, Benny, Odie James, Roll Streets, Stone God Cooks, Westside Pootie, and somebody named Brother Tom Sulce, which I'm unfamiliar with. I know he's on the track, Dr. Britt Baker, which had me thinking it was Stone God for a moment, but it wasn't. Like I said, the project features more of a Griselda affair. It's like if we did an album and basically I'm in it, you two in it, and the cast podcast one day is in it too. It's basically, I don't know, like you hear, duos rapping, or you get any jet to do some bars too. I don't know.
That would be a very wild fever dream of an idea. Let me just tell you.
Oh, God.
Yes. In fact, we didn't tell him that, by the way. as a project to me, both are okay to me. Like, both would be just standard West Side Gun, because other projects, in case you were, like, If y'all somebody who was selling on his last project, then you pay for me because, like, you wouldn't dig the trap beats. Don't worry, there's no trap beats in case y'all get pissy about that. Like, It's that usual boom bap, drumless sound, which I still like. But again, usually mixtape, like usually just mixtapes on a bit man on them, but usually they will grow me later on. I mean, at first I didn't like Fly Guys, Awesome God 2, but nowadays I kinda end up liking it more than usual. But yeah, like I said, to me, it's good, but not great.
Yeah.
And of course,
all glory to the Super Fly God.
Okay. All right. And last but not least, another project that you talked about earlier, which there, yes, Freddy Gibbs, You Only Die Once. Yes, the sequel to the album, You Only Die Twice, which, now thinking about it, you can't make fun because, like, you got number two and Weiss in it, meaning it was spelled twice, like, two Weiss, two Weiss. Damn, see, actually, that sounds as weird as you think it is. Or maybe, I don't know. Or, like, once, like, one, once, one, once. Yeah, you get it. So, yeah, interesting, at least on Halloween, or at least the day after Halloween, I don't know, like, yeah, I would have done a full view of this, but yeah, timing got in the way and other things that I'm not gonna mention here. Also, there's an album where he signed a I've noticed that he signed a different label now. That being AWOL, that label that some people like Little Sims. There's a Wusso, and he's also labeled as signed JPEG Mafia. Oh boy. Don't run away each other, because they already got beef. The concept of the album is basically maturity. Trying to keep control of his vices, but also like trying to focus on adventures like his acting career, possibly questioning his misogyny in the wrong way, and making sure he doesn't go to a downfall of the most powerful guys. Which yes, referenced to that in the last song. It's also yeah. The thing with the devil tempting to go back to that little wildlife wants him to wreck his shit, which I find it funny because the devil we hear is played by Joel Slink Johnson. You know, Black Jesus, Lamar Davis. Yes, Black Jesus is now playing the devil.
Oh, God.
Ain't that some shit.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's a soul project for Freddie Gibbs. Like, meaning is a project that's, you know, you got... Meaning like it's a different beast than what you usually hear from, because like you know usually hear him would be him produced by Madlib or Alchemist or any or maybe that but it's him alone, so no features, and him doing some of the, and some production, which actually not that bad production. Like I kind of fuck with this most of the thing. Like I like the track Rabbit Island, which got this nice beat sample, which reminds me of something, but I can't come along with it. I don't know what to talk about, but I do like this one set of lyrics, during the end, which he says, "Gangsta Kane, I ain't ashamed like Jermaine, I won't delete, nigga." And those strays at me at, well, you know who. Although I will say on one orange track, it's your anniversary. The sample is easy to guess because everybody knows the sample from when you get. But yeah, this album is again, well, like Alex said, it's good but not great, or it's fine. Or you say it's fine. Well, I think it's fine, but to me, it's good but not great. I know when it comes to like Freddie Gibbs album, like people expect to be another, you know, Banana Piano, which I didn't expect that at all. It's basically like on a tier one of his, you know, one of his more, you know, less known albums like ESGN or Shadow of a Doubt, basically one of those albums that basically focus on just him. Which it's fun. It's a fine album. It's all fine. It's all good. And that is Yeah, that's it. For now.
And now Mark goes off into the corner to hydrate. Because that's important.
Yeah.
Hydrate, kids. Yeah. Drink water. Alright, so now is time for me to run down all the albums I have here. And last I counted, I had like 17. Not including one. But yeah, we have to go through these. And quite a few were already touched on. But there's still some unique ones here and there. So I'm going to start with my top recommendations for the past month. And much like Alex, this first one also comes courtesy of Mr. Spectrum Pulse himself. Not from the Bandwidth stream, though. This was one that he gave a proper review to that I saw the enthusiasm. I'm like, okay, why not? So there's a producer named Kelly Lee Owens. I have no clue who this musician is. I just know Mark was very positive about her newest studio album, Dream State. So going into this blind, man, this is a really good electronic record. It's hard to elaborate on in length why it's good, but it just fucking works. Like, listening to songs like Love You Got, which have these really great, like, saturated bass synths playing against this really heavenly ethereal ambience with the cool drums and stuff. Or a song like Heaven, which similarly has the synth work leaving you on cloud nine before having this absolutely wonderful melody coming in towards the middle of it. Same with the song Sunshine. Again, just like, it sounds fantastic in terms of the electronic melodies, like the house production, that four on the floor kick and all. It's just an album that, like, if I had to sum it up, it really knows how to hit the right notes at the right times for the maximum impact. Like, the melody's always coming in at the right time, the beat's always hit at the right time, just everything about it is, like, the composition is just so perfect. Like, everything in its right place. Very good stuff. And then, of course, the first that was already talked about, I realized that I was late on the Brett Summer train, but thankfully, since it's in overtime, I feel like I'm not late at all. So, Charlie XCX, Brett, and it's completely different, but also still Brett. Now that a lot of us have had all the time to absorb all the nuances of the original record, it makes it pretty interesting to get this collection of remixes and rearrangements going really, really far to take the original record, turning it on its head. I get why the name is like what it is, because it really is like a wholly separate album that also still happens to be built on the framework of Brat. Like, you hear the opening remix of 360, which has this complete switch to its vibe, even though it's using the same beat, just because of, like, the enhanced production and, of course, the guest vocals by Robin and Young Lean, even with how Charlie switches up her own verse, and, you know, the dance vibes of Talk Talk with the guest appearance by Troye Sivan sounds like it'd be really great to play through in, like, Dance Dance Revolution, especially those lyrics about romance in a foreign language. The dance and trance vibes of something like So I have an interesting feel to them. A.G. Cook really was a cookin' on that one. And yeah, it really is just like a new record, like built off references and nods to the original, expanding on a lot of the lyrical themes too of like fame, love, longing for simpler times. It's more than just a companion piece. I guess think of it like the Pokemon games in a way, where you'll willingly buy both because we know who you are as people. The guest remix with Billie Eilish still slaps and is still kinky as fuck. Yeah, although I'll admit, if I have to knock a point out for anything though, my favorite track on Brat is Rewind, and I gotta admit the remix version here from Bladey with the two E's, it focuses more on like kind of like that little, it takes off from that more ambient part of the original song to kind of have the full song built off that. Well, the full remix, at least, and I'm sorry, it just doesn't work for me. I'm too much about the energy and hype of that original song, you know? God damn, that shit slapped. But this remix project still slaps anyway. Now let's move on to the next one here. So, yeah, it looks like the Canadian rock duo Japan Droids are, in fact, calling it quits with this new album of theirs, Fate and Alcohol. Their fourth record overall, following 7 years after Near to the Wild Heart of Life, which I remember being on rotation at the college radio station, hence why I'm familiar with the band in the first place. For a little background context, there's a lot of personal factors to account for. Not much, like, you know, kind of newfound sobriety on the part of, let me see what the name was. Shit, I forgot to write that down. But yeah, one of the members, you know, got sober. They didn't really feel like, you know, doing touring stuff and risking falling back into that kind of behavior. Just kind of like the two members going distant. Just a lot of that kind of stuff. But while there's not too much to say in terms of the overall style of the album, I'll just say this is just a really fucking good rock record. Like, the appeal of it is as straightforward as it gets. The songs have these very, like, shimmering, bright, huge-sounding guitars, you know, belting out these really straightforward but catchy riffs and chord progressions that, even though they're not, like, one of those big arena rock acts in terms of their fame, just the sound they bring to the record absolutely feels like they should be playing on that scale. The songwriting having a really great momentum from song to song in terms of how it builds up and pays off, the pacing, letting the guitars ramp up and build into these really grand verses and choruses, combined with the excellent vocals of Brian King, that was his fucking name, I should have read that far in the notes, and even of course the backing vocals from David Prowse, who's also playing the drums on this. And they have a really great dynamic, like the way Brian takes leads and the way that David joins in for like background accentuations, and of course like those great, like, you know, sing-along gang vocals and all. Brian's lyrics tend to paint these very, like, vivid narratives of interesting snapshots of their lives, from late nights at the bar to various romantic struggles, and yeah, King's newfound sobriety being a recurring motif of the lyrics as well. Kind of makes me sad that they're not actually going to tour behind this record, because, again, just thanks to, like, the on-point songwriting and the great hooks and everything, this is just an album that, like, you feel good listening to it, you know? Something about it just kind of makes you stoked on life as much as you can feel given all of the everything. Then, of course, next up, we have the Better Lovers debut album, Highly Irresponsible. So, again, last month, I was the one that had to contend with Keith Buckley's debut With Many Eyes, and as you'll recall, I was very put off by it. Not only did I find the lyrically unjustified hissy fit, that was just, again, the lyrics to be really, really kind of off-putting, but the actual music was nowhere near good enough to overcome all of that. Honestly, it's still kind of off-putting. Like, seriously, like, if I was doing a worst of list for the year, it would be neck and neck with that Bring Me the Horizon album. Just, eh. And hell, that album is even worse in retrospect because, again, Better Lovers very much clearly got the better deal in, like, the band divorce. Because we have this album now, and it's so miles ahead of fucking The Light Age No Fucking Contest. Like, this is exactly the kind of adrenaline blast that I was expecting and needed from the combined efforts of Every Time I Die and Greg Pucciato. Like, from the jump, everything is very finely tuned to their particular brands of metalcore, with the meaty low end and the riffs and a lot of the punctuations of the higher chord progressions, the booming of the drums and their intricate sticking patterns that just fill out and rumble through the mix really nicely, and of course the distinctive gnarl in Greg's more distorted vocals, and it just doesn't let up on the gas at any point through its 10 tracks. The rapid tempos, the distorted riffs counteracted by twangier textures, and even the more menacing melodies of songs like A White Horse Covered in Blood, or even the rapid stomping thrash of songs like Drowning in a Burning World. You do also get plenty of mammoth grooves in songs like Future Myopia or Deliver Us from Life, which is one of the more melodious tracks on the record. It kind of reminds me of the more sonically lush side of Dillinger. All of that stuff is here. All those sounds are accounted for. It all sounds fantastic, especially the production giving some really nice heft to all the instrumentation. Just, goddamn, it really is no contest. Better Lovers wins here. Sorry, Keith. Actually, no, I'm not sorry. Fuck you. Now for this next album, you know, the dichotomy of man can be a strange thing sometimes. For example, a major part of my come up in metal music was listening to late 2000s, early 2010s prog metal. I still think Mastodon's Crack the Sky is where the entire concept of music peaked. I've spun BT Bam's Parallax 2 more times than I can count. Of course, that was the beginning, that was when gent was really taken off as a thing, and I do enjoy me some gent, you can call me a gentleman, as they say. The works, but anybody who knows me knows that I play in a death metal band myself, and that scene normally couldn't give two flying fucks about all this pretentious prog nerd bullshit. Just throw out the sick riffs and the slamming blast beats and double kicks. Oh, if only there was a way to make these two get along, to have prog and death metal sitting in the same room these days, have them be compadres, maybe share some queso together. So, yeah, y'all listen to Blood Incantation? Yes, Blood Incantation. One of the most exciting and interesting death metal bands in the past several years. Back with their newest album, Absolute Elsewhere. The follow-up to 2022's Time Wave Zero, which, for those who have never listened to this band before and maybe need, like, a weird bit of context or a reminder to their to what this band can be about sometimes, Time Wave Zero was 40 minutes dedicated to two lengthy, synthetic, dark ambient tracks with nary a guitar in sight. Yes, this is still a death metal band, all things considered. They just can do stuff like that sometimes. So this new project is quite the opposite. Well, okay, structurally it's similar. Like, it's 43 minutes dedicated to two lengthy musical movements split into three tracks apiece. But the death metal is absolutely, at the very least, in full force here. For the unfamiliar, this band plays in, like, that very sort of huge, cavernous-sounding style embodied by, you know, classic stalwarts of the genre like Incantation and more modern acts like Tomb Mold and even Sivaris. The album starts right away with those bellowing, like, reverb-heavy vocals chugging these heavy riffs, and of course you also get those pummeling drums, but just as quickly as it starts, it delves into these very melodic passages with clean guitars and prog rock keyboards that soar all the way into the atmosphere, especially with that really great guitar solo on the Stargate parentheses Tablet 1. And that's kind of the momentum of this record in sort of a nutshell. When it's not slamming you in the nuts with fucking distorted squealing guitar licks and blast beats, it'll throw the prog shit at you with, like, the synths, the keyboards and the flutes, acoustic guitars, all the kind of stuff that'll open your third eye to the cosmos. My favorite section on this record being in the Message parentheses Tablet 2. Whose proggier segments might as well have come straight from the playbook of the 60s and 70s, like, with bands like Pink Floyd and King Crimson. Yes, you can, in fact, get stuff like that while still listening to fucking Gravity Blast and sick, filthy-ass tremolos. Goddamn, this record is a trip, and, it fucks hard. Then, of course, we have Devin Townsend back at it again with Power Nerd! And, yeah, he seems very much just in a, hey, you know, let's just have fun with this one mood. I mean, how could you not when you have that album opener? A really energetic jam with fun D-beats, upbeat riffs and synths, and silly lyrics about doing what you want in your life. Like, I don't know, petting the cat. Have you ever pet a cat? Cats are kind of adorable when they're not causing problems on purpose. Eyeballs the two cats that live on the other side of this wall. Anyway, so yeah, from there, the album kind of draws from, like, many a source. Like, of course, a lot of it is, like, some of that, sort of sky blue type stuff, and you even have some of, like, a bit of Empath in there, a little bit of the Ocean Machine era, maybe, in spots. Again, it's a very light touch. You get all kinds of, like, again, a mix of, like, acoustic guitars, these soaring choruses and grand booming vocal arrangements, new age ambiance, spacey synths, all accounted for here, and a lot of it arranged pretty damn well. Of course, owing to the more playful nature of that, you know, opening track, you do get some of the more, you know, banger tunes on here, like my personal favorite, Knuckle Dragger, which is just, you know, a pretty fun fist-banging rock jam about, like, getting drunk as fuck to get away from your own thoughts, which, mood. But yeah, just that really satisfying groove of the drums, the spacey electronics, and that really cool bridge with all the auxiliary percussion stuff. It's just songs like that mixed with all the fun ambient stuff that makes this, you know, again, just a fun listen. Especially that album closer, which is, in fact, a trip and a half. Seriously, can Ruby Quaker be a tease for Casualties of Cool 2? Just saying. And now for my absolute top pick of the month. One that I have quite a bit, I could say. So, bit of context. A while back, I was digging through the Needle Drop channel reviews to look for stuff I might have missed in recent years, just to kind of expand my musical repertoire. And I was digging through the Loud playlist for a lot of, like, the rock and metal stuff, and one of the more interesting things that caught my eye was a Yellow Flannel review for an album called God's Country, the debut full-length by an Oklahoma-based band called Chatpile. Now, you might be wondering, first of all, what the fuck is that name? Well, apparently, Chad Pyle is a reference to lead-zinc mining operations that took place in the Midwest in the 20th century, with a pile of Chad essentially being irradiated toxic refuse. Yeah. And I gotta tell you, listening to that record was a hell of an experience. Very, very sludgy and noisy, tinged with a lot of Godflesh-style industrial elements, and heavily indebted to the feel of a lot of underground 90s rock. These compositions being used to create this extreme sense of anxious discomfort. Like, this is in the same field of music as, like, anything Kristen Michael Hader has done. So, that first album, God's Country, is essentially like a lyrical ode to the nightmare hellscape of life in America, whether it's songs covering stuff like homelessness, mass shootings, the serial murders of Roger Dale Stafford, the rat race of capitalism, or even the album closer GrimaceSmokingWeed.jpg, which, haha, funny title, except it's 9 minutes of a self-loathing suicidal drug addict arguing with a hallucination of Grimace. It is one of the most disturbing songs I've ever heard in my life. And so now here we are with album number 2, Cool World. And yes, that is a reference to the 90s movie of the same name. You know, the one. The one where Brad Pitt bangs a cartoon chick or something. I think. I've actually never seen that movie. I'm very tempted to, though. So, you might be wondering where exactly we go from, you know, that first album being such a nightmare of discomfort. I mean, obviously, it's still, like, is firmly in that territory of making your skin crawl metal and grunge, you know, songwriting, once again used to great effect. Of course, we know the album opener and lead single, I Am Dog Now, throwing you straight into the nightmares with the weird, twangy distortion of the guitars, a lot of the reverb on the drums with the offbeat rhythms, and, of course, the manic belting of frontman Ray Gunn Bush, totally his real name, I assure you, are just incredibly unsettling and anxiety-inducing. From there, we go to the second track, Shame, which is definitely a bit more melancholic, with this more steady, straightforward 4-4 instrumental, much more evocative of, like, 90s grunge, with the lyrics kind of describing the horrors of warfare, as it weapons of war kind of violently tear apart the bodies of innocents, and how the gods you believe in are basically going to do nothing to stop any of this. Quote, it stung hot in my eyes, the illusion of justice. It burned deep in my face, felt unbearably selfish. I can't really do it justice. You gotta listen to the way, like, Bush sings these songs. Like, just the specific way he kind of, like, moans his way just so sorrowfully and just kind of manically through, you know, depending on the subject matter of the song. I think that track in particular definitely helps lay out the main point of the record lyrically. While God's Country had a lot of specific topics and ideas in mind, hell, there's even a song in there that's sung from the perspective of Pamela Voorhees from Friday the 13th, and it's not as goofy as you might think. Anyway, this record is a bit more broad in its scope. Bush himself quoted the philosopher Voltaire, describing this record by saying it's about, quote, the price at which we eat sugar in America. Definitely a lot of, like, this unmistakable anti-war bent to a lot of the music, like on the song Funny Man, which is about being this regretful servant to the war machine, quote, spill the blood, gave them as much as they wanted, still had to dance for my supper, still had to give them my body. Or the song Milk of Human Kindness, which is sung from the perspective of a soldier experiencing PTSD over the things he was made to do in the line of duty. There's definitely a lot of other aspects of just, like, the general discomfort of the human experience on display. Like, the album closer No Way Out, whose extremely unnerving, like, buzzing, discordant lead guitars kind of bolster the lyrical theme of feeling completely powerless and stuck on whatever rung of the societal ladder you happen to be born into. Or my personal favorite track on the record, the single Mask, M-A-S-C, which is, on one hand about toxic masculinity, but it's also about the absolute nightmare horror that is having to emotionally open yourself up to other people. A lot of people are screaming internally right now, I know. And that one is backed by what's probably the most tuneful and melancholic instrumentation in the Chad Pyle catalog so far. Like, God, just the absolute mood of, like, those guitar leads, that really satisfying chugging chord progression. It's just, man, that just hits different. And feels like a personal attack on myself for reasons, TM. Again, there's so much of it that's good. I feel bad about, like, wanting to sort of nitpick here, but, like, if there's anything I do have to, like, comment on, it's that the songs still hit as intended in terms of just the anxiety factor and all, but I feel like the broadened scope may not hit as hard as, you know, some of the more focused topics on their debut. Again, Grimace Smoking Weed, that is just a harrowing experience of a song to listen to. But again, that's just a minor nitpick on an album that I'm just telling you right now, this is in the top five. It's a matter of where, but this is in the top five for the year. All right, now that about does it for the top picks. Now for the mid-tiers, quickie type of stuff. Starting, of course, with the new Ellucid project, Revelator. Ellucid, you know, out here solo doing his thing independent of... Okay, well, technically there's a couple of guest features by Billy Woods on here, so it's not completely removed from the Arm & Hammer vibe, but... okay, look, point is, this record is still really good as far as, like, a solo thing. It's got a great mix of beats with a lot of cool musical ideas from the interesting percussion, the bass licks, the reverb-heavy sound of the vocals... various other production ticks like distorted guitars, drifting pianos, and this general sort of hazy industrial ambiance, all backing Ellucid's particular, like, freeform flow with his lyrical reflections on just kind of life and the state of the world around him. Very good stuff. Now, funny story, my roommate, the Slipknot is mid roommate, had DM'd me in the middle of this recording saying, "Oh, hey, I hope you talk about this one." And, this one in question being the Hymns of the Unholy Cult of the Lamb tribute album, because, so, I'm gonna feel weird talking about this because I only know the game by proxy. Everyone else in the house owns a copy and plays it themselves, and they're all big fans. I'm the odd one out here. I kind of really want to get the game, though, because my partner plays it. But, okay, what was I going to say? It kind of makes me sad that the game, it has multiplayer, but it's only local multiplayer, so I can't, like... hop on a call with them and be like, "Hey, let's get our Switches out and start a cult." But that's just a tangent. So what I'm trying to say is, I'm only tangentially familiar with the game by proxy, so I feel like I can't talk about this one as in-depth as I would like to, but what I will say is, while I don't know how it functions as a covers and tribute collection, musically on its own, I mean, shit, if you're big on the metal conventions of the 2000s and 2010s, then... this absolutely has it in the bag, yo. Like, fucking Jones and Heafy, of course, kill it on the vocals. Jones doing a lot of the more melodious work, and Heafy really bringing the heavy on his songs. The guitars and drums absolutely fucking gent. And, of course, speaking of prog, you definitely get a lot of the more electronic synthetic production touches and weird off-kilter time signatures that you expect from the progger side of 2010's metal, and just kind of a lot of that Polyphia influence. If I had to pick a favorite track on here, it'd be the song Conquest. You know, just use that as a sample to hear if you're really going to dig that. Because that shit just really gets your fucking adrenaline going. Also, as far as tributes and stuff, I will say I do recognize that the opening track from this EP, I know for a fact, interpolates like the main menu theme from the game. That much I do know. Alright, so now we got Pharmacon with Maggot Mass. If you enjoy dingy, distorted, industrial droning creepiness, well, it's probably too late to spin this on Halloween or anything, but if you think Halloween is eternal, then give this a spin, because it definitely delivers on that kind of atmosphere. Mm. Now for this Jordy Greep project, the new sound. Yeah, the sudden disbandment of Black Midi was certainly a thing that happened, but now he's on his solo debut, which, first of all, I need to point out the opening track of this record went viral on TikTok, once again proving how little sense that app makes sometimes. But secondly, I mean, I kind of like what this album is throwing down. I mean, if you're familiar with the primary elements of Black MIDI from the complex proggy rhythms, the post-punk guitars, a lot of the math rock stuff, it's all certainly here and accounted for as well. But it definitely has its own unique quirks to it, mainly with the heavy, heavy injections of bossa nova and just like altogether Latin jazz influence folded into this, alongside the very detailed, elaborate lyrical narratives, which, Greep says was just kind of him like writing down stories that he overheard at like his travels and stuff, and just kind of like singing that as tunes and stuff. Godspeed You, Black Emperor. No title as of 13 February. So I'll admit, in general, I finally pulled the trigger on getting into the band's discography as a whole. I know they're pretty essential stalwarts as far as, you know, post-rock as a genre. By the way, a fun fact, their third album was produced by the late Steve Albini. So there is that to note. So I thought a lot of their stuff was pretty solid overall, especially when they get into their more grandiose compositions. This record in particular, as the name suggests, that title is a reference to the, you know, ongoing genocide in Palestine. And while the songs are instrumental in nature, it definitely does do a lot to kind of carry this unsettling sense of dread about just kind of how the world is responding and reacting to the events going on over there. To Shamore, Spiral in a Straight Line, once again delivering another solid record that knows how to bring the emotions through its slow and fast tempos, the really melancholic riffs. By the way, seriously, that guitar tone on this record is just, mwah, they understood the assignment. And of course, the really gruff emotional vocal delivery, just altogether everything you would want out of like a pretty good To Shamore project. Of course, we have this new EP from The Armed with Everlasting Gaze. Six tracks. Okay, it's more like three tracks. And then we get three different remixes of the single Sport of Form, which are, eh. One of them is by Idols and another is by Model Actress, if that counts for anything. But as far as the original stuff here, I kind of like the original songs here. Like, I'll admit, I was kind of cold on Perfect Saviors as a record compared to how much I loved their previous records. But those originals here kind of feel like more of the transition bridge. Like, the ones that kind of tell us how we got from Ultra Pop to Perfect Saviors. And I really liked the song New Christianity way more than most of that last album. So take that as you will. From singer Rag and Bone Man, What Do You Believe In? Compared to the bluesier kind of folk stylings of his previous record, this one delves into more of a pop R&B flavor. But credit where it's due, the man honestly still has a pretty fantastic singing voice, all things considered. And of course, Megan Thee Stallion with Megan Act 2. So yeah, deluxe reissue, 13 new tracks, basically a whole ass new album. Although admittingly, the songs here do kind of feel like just a bit more of a fleshed out like B-sides collection. Maybe not as impactful as the main disc, in my opinion, but there's certainly still some certified bops on here, especially the songs Right Now and, of course, TYG with Spirit Box. Though there are a couple songs I have to call out on here for their questionable sample choices. Specifically, Rock Steady, because of that fucking Sierra song. And while she may have gone off on the verses of Like a Freak, did you have to remind us that Like a G6 was a hit song? I was doing perfectly well not to remember that.
Oh, yeah. Like, they can't all be winners. Although, throwing up a mention to both Bulma and Chi-Chi in the same context, considering, well, we're all sex positive around here.
Fuck yeah.
I'd say that's a pass.
Fair enough. And now that takes care of the quick round, now we have to go to the one lowlight I have of the month. So Fever 333's been in a really weird spot since most of the lineup left, sans Jason Allen Butler, because of some questionable circumstances. Hell, the fact that apparently we're going to be getting some Let Live reunion shows in the near future feels like maybe an early attempt to save face and maybe jump ship here entirely. And it definitely sort of feels like that here with their second full-length album, Darker White, which I would call the textbook definition of a sophomore slump. Just not as good as the first, but, like, why would that be? I mean, I did go back and listen to, you know, their previous songs and all, and the thing is, on first glance, this album isn't really all that different stylistically from their debut. The songwriting still has a lot of what you would expect in terms of a lot of blown-out, low-end, heavy guitar riffs and drums, with the kind of synthetic production, kind of nu metal and hip-hop beats and stuff that you would expect from, you know, well, that kind of sound. Jason, you know, throwing a mix of melodic and shouted vocals with a lot of fast-paced rapping, touching on issues of, you know, racial discrimination, police brutality, social inequality, violent unrest, all that stuff. So, I mean, it is pretty much what you'd expect from a follow-up to Strength in Numbers. So, what exactly is the problem? Well, I think it kind of starts literally from the album opener, which we had heard as a single before, called New West Order. It's a really weird first impression of the record because, like, okay, so this one is overwhelmingly synthetic in its production with sort of, like, the vague fig leaf of, like, an actual drum hiding behind there somewhere. And it kind of sounds a bit like it's sort of on the cringier side of nu metal, with the lyrics basically being like, it's Jason's version of Started From the Bottom, Now We're Here, you know, the myriad of struggles he had to go through on the come up and bragging about where he is now. And then we hear something that we haven't really heard in Fever 33's music up until this point, lyrical pettiness. Quote, yeah, I lost a couple homies, jealousy's a bitch, motherfuckers all mad knowing I won't quit.
Oh no, he pulled a Keith Buckley.
Tell us how you really feel, dude. And I'm glad you said that, because literally the next line in my notes was, I'm getting Keith Buckley vibes off that line. And here's the thing, like, it's such a weird note to start the album on. Because again, otherwise, a lot of the rest of the album is just like, again, it's a lot of the same sort of, you know, societally conscious topics that you would expect from Fever 333. But it just casts this weird shadow that's like, okay? It's just this weak instrumental combined with out-of-nowhere pot shots. It's that just hangs over you when you're trying to listen to it. But again, it's not, even then, it's not like it's instrumentally that far off from the things I liked in their debut overall. There's still some pretty slamming grooves and riffs and songs like Higher Power, and I did eventually get used to the song Swing, but then you get the songs like Bull and a Bullet, or I think it's Bill and a Bullet, maybe I typed that wrong, but which has the feel of like 90s Marilyn Manson, and we do not need to be doing Marilyn Manson style tributes in 2024. You get the song Murderer, which tries to be more melodically dramatic in comparison to a lot of their usual stuff, but I don't know, it just kind of feels really inert, especially considering that lyrically this is a song about the Palestinian genocide. You think, like, I understand being mournful about it, but your Fever 333, your strength is being self-righteously pissed off about shit like this. It's just kind of a weird way to handle that topic, is just what I'm saying. Tourist is the most hip-hop focused song, and it's got a solid lyrical theme specifically taking aim at performative allyship. You know, the ones. But again, just the limp beat and vocals here kind of undersell the point. And remember what I said about, like, the starting note of, like, the weird Keith Buckley vibe from that off, from just that out-of-nowhere petty lyric? Well, we get into a song called Nosebleeds, which is kind of this really self-important song about, like, Jason's career path and why he's doing what he's doing. And there's just this really out-of-nowhere line about banging some other dude's girlfriend? Quote, yo, girl was out baking me a cake on your birthday. She Gatorade thirsty trying to play on a work day. Yeah, the big problem with this album stylistically is just, it's really playing into the super cringy aspects of nu metal. And, like, the good stuff on here is just not good enough to, you know, counteract that balance. It's just all out of whack here. And that weird, just like, you know, stereotypical rap bravado pettiness is just like, what happened? Again, it really feels like someone's about to say something and spill some tea, and he's just like trying to save face and act tough ahead of time. Is that just me? Am I the only one getting that suspected vibe? I don't know. Either way, just, yeah, this is the sophomore slump textbook. But while that about wraps it up for all the albums we have to discuss as solo entities, for the first time in a while, it's time for a big old group talk, because we know who we are as people. So, the one big album, I believe it was in fact a number one debut on the Billboard 200, if I was reading the charts correctly.
Yep, and still number one to this day. Today.
Nice, very nice. So, yeah, here we are with Chromacopia, the latest from Tyler, the Creator, following up 2021's Call Me If You Get Lost, as well as coming a year after the estate sale edition of the album. And yeah, like I said earlier in the year, we were about due for like new Tyler at this point. It was like 2-3 years to, you know, usher us into the next phase of this man's career. So what exactly is Tyler cooking? What is he creating here? What's his game? What's the story on this one? Well, as we remember from the initial promo teases, the narrator figure, you know, the pseudonym that he's hiding behind on this one is Saint Chroma, a man with a very unsettling mask and a very silly-looking weird split hairdo. I wonder how long it took to grow and style that one. But yeah, we open up with that track, Saint Chroma, although we get a more full version here, and the album introduces us to him via an important recurring motif on the record, that being narration by Tyler's mom, Bonita Smith. Again, pretty much every other track is going to open with some advice from her about life.
Yeah.
The verses, like, the first half at least, kind of has, like, this whispered intensity to Tyler's flow, but then we kind of get to the back half. By the way, the first half also has, like, that great marching band stomp that really, ramps things up until the back half gives us more of, like, a typical Tyler flow with a lot of, like, pianos and some cool, clattering drum cymbals and stuff in the background. It's that old explosion of color.
Fits well with the main central thematic concept of that. Well, it's about him, a lot of it's about him growing up in Inglewood, California as a teenager. And there's a lot of stories to be told.
Mm-hmm. And okay, and also to add some things, like also there's a vocals from a singer, Daniel Caesar, on here. And if you wonder about the features of this album, yeah, they're a bitch to guess at least the first one is released because he was just guessing. It's that guy. It's that guy. It's actually that guy. It was actually him. It's actually her. It's actually that guy. It's that cat.
Ah, that's where the cat went. You need to go back to your mom's room, dude. Come on. Yes, you're very cute. I will, in fact, give you scritches on your little baby head. Now go to your room. Anyway. There's not actually a cat here. I just wish there was. But yeah, that backstory is kind of important. Because like when you really think about it, even Tyler said himself, like, with how he presents himself on record, there's a lot we don't know about him from like before he was 17, pretty much. That's kind of like a big mystery area. But then after that intro, we get Ratata, which is pretty much about as pure 2010s Tyler as you can get, with the record scratches, the wood-clicking percussion, those blaring synths, real, like, flower boy cherry bomb territory, with Tyler, you know, bragging about how cool and awesome he is. And also it has one of my favorite lyrical moments in, like, any song of his, where it's like, never tell these, or those women, where you breathe at, and like you listen to it, the beat's playing, and when he says, or those women, the beat just drops for a split second, almost like it kind of reminds me of like that one bit in Sweatpants. You know, the Fiskars don't make noise when they start up, just so you know. That's just a funny moment to me.
Yeah, and also twist lyrics. It's like Wilma warms up, darling. Wilma warms up. This guy's niggas going to jiffy up. Crystal damn bandit diaper in a sippy cup. Fun toast in the day. Actually, my favorite should jiffy up. Me and Lionel Boyce and drummer cast, but boy can act now. It was really our future. All the mother niggas whacked out. The niggas, I mean, I say at the candy. It's a fact now. I'm paranoid now because niggas are really bums. And then repeats that whole ass thing. Which leads into the other, well, the other single, that being Noid. Ah, Paranoid.
It's funny. So, yeah, Noid. This is another really great song starting just from the beat. It kind of has this really cool, like, classic rock feel with, like, the bursts of fuzzed out guitars, the kind of sparse but still, like, driving drum. And this is kind of where we start to get into sort of, like, the bigger ideas as far as, like, what Saint Chroma is as a persona. Because, again, it's literally just, like, Tyler in, like, this very, very cheap, not all that flashy mask. It is almost quite literally a thin facade that he's hiding behind. And here it makes sense because it's literally about, like, his relationship to his fame and how he feels like he can't trust anyone. And, like, he's rapped about stuff like this before, like one of my all-time favorite Tyler tracks, Colossus off of Wolf. But it's,
oh, yeah.
But it's interesting to hear him do it here from, like, behind this facade where, like, feeling like the only way you can talk about, like, fans hounding him, paparazzi, people leaking his music, that the only way he can touch on stuff like that is to kind of, like, hide behind a mask, which ironically lets him be more honest about whatever it is he's feeling.
Evident by the album cover, yeah.
Still a very raw album cover, indeed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. This is the track, it was one of my favorites, that being Darling I, don't ever tell a bitch you love her if you don't mean it. It's like, don't tell her that you don't love her. They don't want to hear it. Like, if you love her, and if you mean it, then tell her. If not, then don't say shit. Was Mama specific? It's an intro, which the intro begins. You got that mid 2000s R&B cooler label production, and there's get also vocals from Tizo Touchdown, which gets a darling, I keep falling in love. They both sound very easily. Like, it just the beat is one of the best soundtracks on the best soundtracks on the album. It also, I know the whole clicks and effects sounded very similar, like, the whole, like, clicks and effects are very similar to, that one Snoop Dogg track, that one track, Travel Like It's Hot, like.
Ah, the good old days. Now, tell me, who produced that beat?
Pharrell.
Wow.
Yes. A
Tyler album with Pharrell homages? Say it ain't so.
Perish the thought.
Yeah. That leads to Hey Jane, and it's everybody's favorite panic button thing, and unexpected pregnancy, and how to deal with it.
Oh, fuck!
Yeah.
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 That's not a great thing to have to deal with.
Yeah, details. His side, her side, like, it's basically, you know, go all around, like, it doesn't bullshit you with this, like, the one side that you, like, you know, teach all the, you know, the anxieties, the emotions, the conflict, everything. I mean, everything going on there, like, oh, fuck, what do I do? I got you pregnant again. Yeah, things like that. And I like the fact that, you know, you do get, like, different views of, like, different POVs of that shit, which I can dig. Yeah, I can dig with that shit. Yeah. Nemechek, yeah.
Just remember, kids, if there's one thing you take away from this album, listen to Tyler's mom.
Yeah. And if you must, a rabbit before you tap it.
And then, okay, this is the track, I Killed You, and you're thinking, wait, this is the old, no, it ain't the old Tyler. In case you figure to that. The thing is mostly about, well, black hair, as you can see, as in how, you know, how every time we do a black hair, people are like, you better cut that shit off. Basically saying, like, you gotta hair like this, you can't wear it like that. Basically, all this shit that most society say, yeah, you can wear it like that, or shit like that, even though we try to, you know, express ourselves or how we wear our hairstyles. You get what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, God damn, get off my dick.
And things are very soulful and lax with the, this comment track, Judge Judy. Which happens to go named Judy. And they have some good times. They're like, oh, some good times. Like, oh, Judy, she's nice girl. And they talk about how and why they communicated much. Would you find out, okay, why don't you call him as much? Why don't you call him as much? They found out that she has cancer and it spread. And the letter he got from her, it's a possible, she passed on. Which, yeah, damn. Oh, yeah, it's a sweet, wholesome, yet sad song. Damn.
Yeah, there's just a lot of complicated feelings to work through in a situation like that.
Yeah, like, it's very somber, a somber feel about that shit. Then you get the Sticky.
Yeah, then we get one Sticky, one of the certified absolute bangers of the album.
Nothing like, feeling sticky after dealing with all that seriousness.
Yeah, you know, you get a beat that, like, from the intro kind of ramps up to giving you a lot of, percussive elements, like those bleacher, like, you know, pep rally stomps, a lot of, like, tinkling, like, kind of the sound of tapping metal on. Like, have you ever seen a video where, like, a guy will play a melody by just, like kind of drumming on, like, glasses of water? Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Like, that kind of
yes.
thing? Yes. Oh, thank God. Okay, so I'm not going insane then. You get, like, the marching band drum rolls, and, you know, something that occurred to me by this point of the record, there's a decent amount of, like, very percussive elements across a lot of the album, from, like, you know, Saint Chroma to Ratata. Hell, even I Killed You kind of has, like, these bongos and congas, along with, like, blaring trumpets and stuff. Hell, there's a lot of trumpets on the record, too.
Yep.
But would it surprise you if I told you Timbaland is credited on this track?
Wait, he is?
Yep.
Huh. Okay,
I forget he still does stuff sometimes.
Yeah, he still does stuff. But yeah, for a song as sticky as this, it's only right we get a menagerie of sex-positive talent on board, like Glorilla and Sexy Red and Lil Wayne for some reason.
Okay,
to be fair, even Lil Wayne kind of popped off on this. He has his moments.
Yeah, it's the one time where it's like, he's not so bad here.
Yeah, I don't know if it was just, like, turning the cosmic dial, like, this is the one where Lil Wayne does okay, but, yeah, I mean, pretty much everyone went off and kept the hype going. Yeah, Glorilla, Sexy Red, Lil Wayne, all that good stuff. Then, of course, like, after that, there's, what is after that on the track list?
Take Your Mask Off.
Ah, yeah. The one that I would say probably, like, most directly confronts the whole Saint Chroma concept. He's just kind of like going, this lyrics kind of like bounce back and forth, different perspectives of like people who are having to wear masks as their own ways of confronting reality before eventually just kind of becomes like Tyler sort of arguing between himself and Saint Chroma, like fronting, putting on a mask, trying to figure out like how much of himself he needs to put out there and how he's even going to like deal with reality and everything.
He was talking about how somebody try to be a tough gangster, that that being his mask, but in the inside, he might be just scared of a kid, scared person, or whatever. And then there's other ones where it's like you have a preacher, but this mask is like hides up from how to get, you know, his queerness from, you know, anybody. But so like that.
Yeah, there's quite a bit on there. But I'm wondering where we're on the track. Oh, hey, at this point, we'd be on track number 10. That's always a fun one, because on pretty much every Tyler, the Creator album up to this point, that's usually, like, a particularly lengthy one, because it's kind of like the slash track, you know?
Yeah,
you know, it's a word, then slash, and another word. It's like two songs flowing together into one. So what's the deal here? What's track number 10 here?
Let's see, track 10, Tomorrow. That's it. Just Tomorrow. There ain't no slash, no nothing like that. Just the one thing.
Huh.
And it's a bit different than in case you want, it's not the same. In case you're wondering, you're not gonna see the usual Tyler format here,
because,
well, yeah.
No, a lot more subdued in a lot of the stuff here, considering first half of the track is, well, it's basically a more melodic guitar ballad. Then the booming bass and bars come in, which, thanks, Daniel Caesar. We're glad to have you on here for it.
Mm-hmm.
Here, here. Yeah, it's like several times he's shown up so far.
Yeah, you should have won Tristan Corman and also Tokyo, and also Tokyo Mass as well. Doing vocals along with Latoya Williams.
Yeah, but this, all this subdued stuff is fun and good, but let's piss some people off on the next track.
Oh yeah, after that we get Thought I Was Dead, which features guest appearances from Santa Gold and Schoolboy Q.
Or Playboi Carti, if you have the physical version as a bonus track for some reason.
Wait, seriously?
Oh.
Yeah,
okay, there's a lot of...
Yeah, Thought I Was Dead. We've already gone through a bit of emotional nuance. Now it's time for Tyler to just clap back at how he's the only real motherfucker in the scene and everyone else is fucking lame.
I mean, yeah.
It's a rap album. There's gotta be at least one track like that on here.
Yeah, like, I remember, like, earlier this year when we're making some comments about how these new white boy rappers, they all think mimic rappers, but they mimic rappers like Future or Gucci Mane, but they don't really, you know, respect the culture. And of course, some got pissed off at that, even though Tyler's kind of right in my opinion, and it kind of holds up and considering like lyrics, which quote, white boys mucking this shit and y'all mad at me, I can suck my dick, pulling them old t-shirts, all that. I'm all over that bitch. See, since they got dirty, I was young man. The nigga hit 30. Did a nigga hit 30. It's basically saying like, okay, you know I was right. Which you know I was right. Because I saw Schoolboy Q verse recently, like Square Bird 20 M's 2018, like the bills going OD, niggas in the get rich and they act weird. Then you work on to the party, then your butt peers. Shit, I'd rather play golf than till check clear. Niggas to 35, now they out of here.
Now tell us how you really feel, Tyler. Where's my gun?
Now the three times we did that shit.
Nobody ever expects the rule of three.
They never do. It's like the Spanish Inquisition.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
References to things. But yeah, right. What comes after that, Mark?
Okay, we got Balloon, which has this very musical sounding beat on it, and I might have something that Tyler would rap on.
Yeah, that was weird. That was such the odd one out, even considering it's just like the second to last song.
Yeah, like, okay, he goes about success and ambition, and he also get a verse from Dochi. Who, on a later note, as I took the whole mixtape, Alligator Bites Never Heal today, pretty all right.
Yeah, they're just trading verses about sex positivity. Kind of antithetical to one of the earlier tracks, but, you know, it's all about growth and everything.
Yeah. And then we get the finale track, I Hope You Find Your Way Home. Which is more continuous what's going on with Hey Jane, with him explaining, like, you know, maybe not ready for a kid, but he's thinking, but maybe I should go before it's too late. Like, what if I'm 40? What if I'm 40 and I ain't got no seed yet? Or, like, it's basically a bunch of thoughts going on in his head. Like, and of course, and the mother saying, okay, you know what? I probably knew how far you came and all that shit. Which, of course, you had the closing words. Chromacopia, chromacopia.
Yep. If you have it on the looping play, then it would pretty much just like perfectly circle around to the beginning. Gotta love when an album does that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it ends a positive message from Mrs. the Creator. We're all for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's just really proud of her son.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm going to say I think I actually like this better than Call Me If You Get Lost. It's mostly the production for me. Like, obviously, a lot of the lyrics are pretty much as on point as they can be in terms of, like, you know, the bragging, the paranoia, you know, the more interpersonal stuff. It's just like the minor touches, like kind of that mid-2010s Tyler production, with especially the more percussive elements at play. Like obviously me being a drummer, you throw some cool percussive drum stuff in there, that hits a sweet spot for me right there.
This is for me, like, I've been trying to figure out, like, that only sound more than Call Me If You Get Lost, which I kind of did. I do think this is more, I won't say maybe on tune with, I want to say Flower Boy a bit, maybe it's just a potential, and I know people say Cherry Bomb, but I don't know, but I haven't listened to Cherry Bomb enough to probably get to it, but I can, I guess I'll see in these jobs of terms of potential, maybe some experimentation here and there, but again, we still dealing with Tyler's emotional psyche and development and growth and some hints that, you know, it's passive without any problematic elements, which of course you get instrument production as always with some three smooth vibes going on. That's some smooths on, and of course mentioned some different like last one's like always does, and yeah, it's still excellent. And my cat's on my laptop. Don't do that shit.
I don't know how I'd rank it personally, considering I don't have to listen to all of them enough to form a proper ranking or anything, but I will say I enjoyed my time with it. I'll go back to it again, and possibly again, especially for the harder beats on here.
Hear, hear.
Yep.
And that officially closes out all the discussion for the longest roundup we've had in a while. Fucking 2 hours, Jesus Christ.
Damn!
It's year-end season coming up now. We got a couple stragglers left, but yeah, you don't know the drill. Christmas Day, it'll come like it always does.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe
I can get this to under 2 hours in the edit. We'll see.
And now it's just us. Well, either just looking for shit we either missed, or I don't know what's new shit that might come out at the last minute, or yeah.
Yeah, that's the great mystery. But until then, you can, of course, know where to find us on all the usual places. Blue Sky mainly, surrealresolution.bluesky.social. Of course, surrealresolution.com. Find us there. Find this podcast, Podcast O&A, all that good stuff. Be sure to jump into the Discord to be immediately notified when new stuff goes up on the site. And, of course, in the description will be a playlist of our recommended tracks of choice from our recommended albums of choice. So, thank you for listening. again, we'll be back. There'll probably be like at least one more weekly episode, one or two more weekly episodes before, you know, the list proper. So yeah. Look forward to that. And, you know, whenever the year-end shenanigans happen. So until then, peace out.
See ya.